You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And welcome, welcome, welcome. Happy Heroes Day. Yes, it's 4 p.m. and I'm still going to wish you Happy Heroes Day, guys, because it's the first time we're seeing each other. But welcome, welcome, welcome to this shortened edition for today's session of the Home Run, because at 6 p.m., obviously, as you do know, at the end of every month for the past calendar year so far, we've got China Corner following on after this particular two-hour period session of the Home Run. But nonetheless, wherever you do find yourselves on this particular Wednesday, which is actually very coincidental if we look at the particular placement of this 26 August, it is pretty peculiar. It is smack bang in the middle of a week, you know, splitting a public holiday, splitting the week basically into two. But nonetheless, I obviously welcome you to this particular session today, as well as also if you've been following much of the particular developments in terms of how you are celebrating or how the rest of the country is celebrating Heroes Day. It is up to you. Personally, I also believe that every Namibian alongside yourself, and yours truly, me here, you know, every one of us, we are technically heroes in our own particular shape and form. Now, besides me, obviously, you know, rubbing your ego a little bit and mine also in the same time, we obviously have a particular discussion lined up for you today, which technically does coincide as well. There's another coincidence, coincide itself as well, with what is currently happening in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. If you don't know where Ulaanbaatar is or where Mongolia is the famous country that almost conquered the whole of the Northern Hemisphere. That's when a little shepherd by the name of Genghis Khan, or as the Mongolians call him, Chinggis Khan, you know, decided to get on his little pony. The horse literally looks like a miniature horse in your mindset, but it's not a miniature horse. It's slightly bigger than a mule, definitely faster than a pony, your average pony that you can think of, and it's actually a horse. But the discussion that I'm citing is currently still ongoing because it's ending only on Friday. Our Minister of Environment is currently there with what would seem like most of her technical leadership from the Ministry of Environment. I had a look-see in terms of what delegation went with our minister, because that's the lovely thing about these international platforms. You can actually get that documentation and understand who's there. So it includes the environmental commissioner, Mr. Mufeti. It includes, I think, three environmental scientists from the ministry as well. And then you're definitely sure the PA should, has to be there of the minister. Because yes, PAs are that important that they have to be everywhere. You know, ensuring that, you know, the agenda and timekeeping is being met. But as we obviously look at this particular discussion, not in terms of the delegation that went with, but rather sort of like what this particular event in Mongolia speaks to. So if you don't know, I've referenced this a little bit earlier in this month of August. It is 2026 is the year of the Conference of Parties engagements. 2026 will see all three conference of party engagement. This is the climate. This is the conference of parties on desertification taking place right now in Mongolia, happening. Then it'll be followed by the conference of parties on biodiversity. Sorry, because the word convention popped up in my head because I thought, should I have said the convention on biodiversity? But they all three are conventions. Convention on desertification, convention on biodiversity, and then the convention on climate change. They all stem from the same treaty back in 1992. Yeah, the one in Rio de Janeiro. And they all three of these particular conferences obviously highlight three particular crucial and critical targets and goals that countries have to take. Now, since we cited the SDG discussion yesterday, it is an important thing that you don't divide yesterday's talk from today's talk, because yesterday's talk is actually dependent, intermingled, hyperconnected, in tandem, and directly connected to today's talk. So too also, will these two same talk, these two discussions of today and yesterday, will also connect in when we look at the Convention of Biodiversity event that will come a little bit later in this year. I have a sneaky suspicion it might be in next month, September, or it might be in October. Just obviously trying to verify that. But September is obviously the month of General Assembly. So our president will be going to the General Assembly once again. Just highlighting to you that once again as well. So the Ulaanbaatar discussion so far has taken one based upon the impact that desertification and land degradation can have, specifically on grasslands, rangelands, and in great number, the ecosystems that are dependent upon it. Now, I am very, very careful in using the word ecology, because I discovered through the explanations and the definitions that exist that the word ecology, you have to imply which one of the ecologies that you're talking about. So if you just drop, if you just, you know, like name dropping, if you just drop the word ecology in your sentence and you assume that the person that you're talking to has to know, I am implying the natural environment around me, that person could probably think of the man-made environment, which is also an ecology itself, or the aquatic or the marine-based environments, which are not the environments that you live in. It is partially natural and partially of the natural environment, but it's clearly labeled as separate from the on land or the land based environment that you are implying. So I'm a little bit, you know, careful about using that word ecology, but I am very comfortable in interchangeably using the words natural environment, natural resources, the environment outside of the man-made environments, as well as also the direct names like rangelands, savannas, forests, rainforests, agricultural land, so on and so forth. And also the other technical labels that have popped up and come through in the presentations we've done here on the home run for the past 2 years and so on. And it all speaks to the same particular endeavor that is currently being discussed. The endeavor has been taking action. Now, 2024 was Saudi Arabia's desertification conference. 2026 is Mongolia. In between, or just before Saudi Arabia, we have to know, dear listeners, we have to know the impact specifically of, so Armenia will host the Convention on Biodiversity. The UN Biodiversity Conference, which is also known as COP17. This will take place in Armenia, and it will be in October, right after General Assembly engagements, just before the annual conference of parties, climate change engagements that will take place in Turkey, or Turkey, as it has to say now, a little bit later this month, this year. So 2026 is a pretty busy year in terms of global commitments and discussions. Yet, various particular voices were heard on day one of, okay, not day one, at the high level engagement, the high level opening ceremony that took place on Sunday or Monday, at the start of this week, because the engagement has been running since the 17th last week. And, I only discovered now that our minister actually only had an opportunity to provide some sort of contribution yesterday, already. And this particular engagement, because I'm still waiting for her particular speech to see what is being said there, because the thing that was sent by the guy that I worked with in my previous career, he's now the sort of like the chief PRO of the Ministry of Environment. He still has to supply me with that speech. I still have to see what that speech basically implies. And yeah, we get a particular indication in terms of what she actually contributed and how it basically sounds. Now, yeah, I've got Kanjengo frying me, guys, here on another particular group. But yeah, he once told me that me and my British English, but it's just me and my South African accent, basically, which is technically a Namibian accent. But anyway, the particularity that we've got to look at is what is actually on the table at this convention? At this convention in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, what are we going to get out of this? Now, remember, I've continuously highlighted to you guys since 2024, Brazil was last year. Azerbaijan was the year before, 2024. It was before then the UAE was the previous climate change conference of parties. Ever since UAE, 3 years ago, the loss and damage fund has not become operational. So what is the loss and damage fund? I'll just jog your memory on this particular indication. The loss and damage fund has the ability for a country like Namibia, when we suffer any natural disaster, we can apply to it. Currently, right now, when you look at natural disaster incorporated and PTY LTD, you don't know when it's going to happen, how it's going to emerge, what level of damage it might cause, whether it'll just be contained in your rural areas of your country. But if it's in your rural areas, will it impact your agricultural capabilities? For example, that is what happened to Zambia 2 years ago, if you guys remember, back in 2024. Zambia was at the start of 2024, lack of rainfall technically meant that they had a diminished agricultural output. But then, it wasn't just agricultural output, because President Bumba at the time kept referencing it's the first time that he has heard in his life Zambia announced a national emergency regarding the water or the water levels or the rainfall or lack or diminished rainfall to quantities of 2024 in that period of 2024. It then cascaded on where later in that year Zambia themselves had to announce load shedding across the country. Because what does Zambia have? They've got a lot of standing, they've got a lot of bodies of water, and a lot of standing bodies of water, like lakes and rivers, or rivers that flow into lakes. And they've got a whole bunch of hydroelectric power stations that generates the country's electricity. Namibia also buys electricity from Zambia. Now you could see the compounding economic problems that climate change creates for a country, a tropical country, a country like Zambia. It's tropical. It's a tropical country. A country like Zambia how they had to react, the contractions that they had to plan for in terms of output, whether it be economic or output, whether it be in processes. This could be from the electricity generation to the agricultural generation or the agricultural outputs. You could see the devastation. I am not bragging in terms of Namibia's particular continuous, what can you call this? You can basically call it our sword dance, you know? If you don't know what a sword dance is, it's basically our dance with death in some poetic terms, meaning that we are perpetually living in disaster phase. We are perpetually knowing about our precarious existences. We perpetually have to plan for every possible eventuality. Our level of planning in Namibia, and even though we slightly sighed and we had a slight reservation yesterday in yesterday's discussion, but David and I technically were of same agreement. Like all us Namibians are of similar agreement. We know how to plan. Because we don't live in the greenest country on this planet. We're the only country on this planet with two deserts in its borders. And guess what? Those deserts contribute to the climate of this country. They do. I will continuously reference Utusep of literally what desertification creates. People just think it's the sand, the sun, and that's it. It's dry. You don't know what comes with that dryness. With that dryness comes the most inhospitable level of heat. Along with that dryness comes the worst oven temperatures that you've never experienced on this planet. You will feel it there at the Kwisab River, on the banks of the Kwisab River. An ancient river that has communities living right next to it for as long as time had been counted on this planet. People have lived next to it, and people have seen it basically dry up. Now I ask you, when we obviously look at these particular conditions, these things that I'm describing to you, there's the whole Kunene as well. There's the whole Kunene that also has perpetually low rainfall numbers to think about. But Kunene, if you put Kunene, Hardap, Karas, I don't know if I should add Irongo. I really don't know. But if you take Kunene, Hardap, and Karas, and you put them, and I don't know if I should add Oshodonchupa, and you put them literally in the current agenda happening right now in Mongolia, which is they've got three, they're presenting three particular solution, policy solution documents. Let me just reference them for you. The one is, wrong message. The one is nature-based solutions. The other one is rangeland, rangeland and forestry. And the last one is water and land. Back in last week, here on the Home Run, we cited a water and land discussion, which was that Kavango Link dimension. We have spoken before also about potentially nature-based solutions, for example, like community-based resource management, as well as also the Nilaleg initiative being run by the Ministry of Environment, which I would also like to understand. We have this tendency in Namibia as well. I'm not complaining, but it's an observation that slightly is also coincidental, mind you. We have this tendency in this country of having competing initiatives, not regional based, but like literally nationwide, nationally based initiatives competing with each other for the same resource of money and financing and resources. I realized up until last week when we did the Nilaleg discussion, because sometimes you mull about the topics that we present here on the Home Run. And I realized, but the Nilaleg program, which is about land restoration, improvement of soil fertility, land restoration basically does incorporate you planting saplings, like small trees or bushes and shrubs, which are indigenous plant life. in order to improve the soil structure, improve the soil fertility, ensure that these plants basically invest back into the soils. But you could have done that as well also through an agricultural practice. If you did not know, you can use legumes. Legumes are very good at doing this. Not a potato. A potato is actually a very, very debilitating vegetable. I say debilitating in the sense not that it causes you harm. It's actually very nutritious for you, the human. It causes the soil harm because it takes a lot from the soil and you continuously have to feed that soil. And feeding that soil too much, you will technically see, whoever the potato farmers are of this planet in Namibia, you will see your costs in terms of continuously feeding and maintaining the soil's fertility levels, so that it's adequate for the plant itself, will be something that you will notice it yourself. Potato farming is a pretty taxing exercise. But legumes are not. Peanuts and all these other particular, other nut derivatives that obviously grow close to the soil or under the soil, where the plant basically captures from the air and reinvests into the soil. Those particular kinds of agricultural practices, which are crop cultivation mechanisms or activities, they help with soil fertility to one extent. There was one story that I read in terms of one of the guys. He's one of the, I don't want to like using that word, forefathers, but I'll use it for now. It's not Adam Smith, not the guy that wrote the first book, The Wealth of Nations, the first economics book, The Wealth of Nations. There's a guy before him who was a British pastor, an English pastor, a vicar. They don't use the word pastor in England because of the Church of England, which are now basically Catholics now, since, you know, Catholicism now recognizes them. But the Church of England has got something like the foot soldier on the ground known as a vicar. So there was a vicar in England in the 1700s, and he did a study, and it's one of these slightly extracted, subtracted from the overall economics discussion in early economic thinking. But his particular dimension was based upon is there too many people to feed the world? No, sorry. Is there too many people to feed from the current resources available to humanity? At that stage in the 1700s, now remember, I'm still in the discussion of land degradation, soil fertility, and nature-based solutions, and water and land dimensions. This guy back in the 1700s, he mulled over the exact possibility of an event, an eventuality. Remember, he's talking about in the 1700s. The 1700s was possibly also when the last actual cold age happened. The last cold age, not cold age, ice age happened. The last known ice age that planet Earth experienced was the ice age that caused the severe famine in Ireland, not the one of the 1800s. The one 30 years just before the potato blight famine of Ireland, the one that was caused by an extended winter in the northern hemisphere. And it was such a severe winter, it basically killed all potential crop harvests of Europe, of many countries in Europe. At that stage, there were still kingdoms, obviously. And it was a discussion in terms of, what's going on? But today's discussion, guys, has got a multitude of impacts and inputs of recent developments in the past 4 days that I have to cite for you. Yesterday, an engagement kicked off that I'm actually waiting for the full basic knowledge set about. Minister Nekundi from Works and Transport attended a particular engagement in Swakopmund about the the potential weather outlook for Southern Africa, for SADC. The downside, so that I can just share this information with you, the downside of this was, it was just a whole bunch of keynote addresses. I still have to look at some of the things, but the actual presentations is what I'm interested in, because after 11 o'clock, you know, the media was told to go out, and this is being hosted at Swakopmund. So, and this is primarily about the the 33rd Southern African Regional Climate Outlook Forum, SARCOF 33, that happened yesterday. Now, tomorrow, I'm going to sit through a webinar by the University of Stellenbosch, where they've got two particular, I don't want to call them climatologists, I still have to see what their titles are, where they will also look at the weather outlook for SADC. It's like weather forecasting for the region, heading into what is the region's proverbial rainy season. Because our rainy season, guys, is going to start from October to next year, just so that you know. So it's in good timing that we're going to have this, and it's obviously going to illuminate a lot of particular dimensions of discussion that we've got to take stock of. So the Ulaanbaatar conversation, firstly and foremost, what I've been seeing has been a great promotion about Mongolia, which is completely off topic from where we need to be. But there was a tagline that continuously resonated with me during when I was watching the particular high-level opening ceremony that happened a couple of days ago, were a key phrases like, the land is life, given, and this life obviously helps to sustain all particular known systems that you see and interact with on a daily basis. No more truer words than those words spoken by the President of Mongolia, the Under Secretary General Amina Mohammed from the UN, who was there, and then the former President of Finland, the other lady that also spoke, who was there. No truer words were spoken by all these particular delegates. But we have to ask this particular question in terms of what we know we have to do. What we know we have to do. You see, guys, highlighting a discussion about climate change, about desertification, about biodiversity is a discussion that your whole country has to participate in. Now, it's all good and well, for example, that we acknowledge in Namibia that we've got resources that we can leverage. But the question I keep asking every day, even though I got a slightly, you know, political answer back in 2022 when the first announcements of Namibia's oil came about under former Minister Alwindo, and just after the Ukraine conflict broke out, no country wants to give away a strategic advantage. No country. And I've seen in the Global South, I've been observing in the Global South, we've all latched onto this mentality of strategic thinking. Yes, Namibia's got a national document known as a national policy document, the NDB6. But in that NDB6, it's a strategy. It's a strategy to be competitive. Now imagine to yourself, every other SADC member has a similar strategy. Similar strategy. It's transparent. It's obvious. It's publicly known. It's available to anyone to download and read. And so it's the same thing I can do. I go to the White House website of the United States and I download those latest updates. That's how I got to the America First foreign policy document. That's how I didn't download the America First public health policy document, the one that Helmut loves citing. But these documents are open to everybody. These that come from governments. Okay, I don't know about Russian because I'm a bit afraid of the Russian cyber, you know, cyber presence, because they can easily use your computer for nefarious reasons. But yeah. So if you look at where your country wants to be, your country Namibia, if you look at where we want to be, inadvertently, we are competing with the rest of the world. At COP17 right now in Ulaanbaatar, the representatives there are talking about, we've got to identify that desertification is not just one country's responsibility. Or just because Namibia sits with two deserts within its border, Namibia has to carry this burden of dealing with desertification alone. It's not like the Kalahari Desert ends literally at the border with Botswana and you find a different Kalahari Desert on the other side of the fence. No, it doesn't. It's the exact same dry landscape that cascades from one country into the next. Now, I don't know if it cascades from Namibia into Botswana or it started in Botswana and is cascading this way. However, when you flip the script and you flip the coin and you look at, for example, the conversation about the Kavango link, that the pipeline, the proposed pipeline situation that we looked at a couple of weeks back, then you can see the activity that NamWater and Namibia is thinking about with Kavango Link impacts Botswana. We cannot have any kind of a bone to pick with Angola, because 80% of the Kavango River lies in Angola. Its origins are within Angola. So we can't pick a bone with our northern neighbor about the particular water construction efforts that they are proposing on that river in the near future. However, Botswana can have a bone to pick with us because their entire tourism sector depends upon the Okavango Delta. And Namibia wants to install a straw in the middle of a river that is susceptible to future climate change deviations and impacts. That's Namibia's plan. So Namibia, in strategic thinking, we are aggressive. Which technically goes against our international relations policy. Here, we wish to be aggressive against Botswana. We wish to be, by putting that straw in that river. Whereas that whole delta, because 80% of the delta, or 90% of the delta, lies in northern Botswana. Because the thing ends, the river flows into northern Botswana. So now we ask, or I ask, not we. I don't have multiple personalities. I'm sorry. I'm not a, I'm not suffering. Someone suffering from multiple personality disorder. Let me ask this particular question. It's a question you need to think about as a listener out back there, wherever you are, a viewer watching on our social media platforms. Ask yourself this question. What are we getting at as Namibia? What are we getting at? First and foremost, a couple of years back when I decided to start hosting the discussions about the competition for the same resource. Ancestral land claims for land. Agriculture, mining, and economic development. And tourism. Whichever one you want to put it at. All these conversations started compounding the same particular conclusion that I sat with at the end of 2024. We have no plan. The siloed operation in Namibia is the Namibian government and Namibia's biggest weakness. This fragmentation is still happening today because guess what? When I told you guys just about this 33rd Southern Africa Climate Outlook conference that Minister Nekundi is attending there in Swakopmund yesterday, or attended yesterday in Swakopmund. When I told you about this, David asked me a little bit earlier just before I stepped into the studio, Dwight, what is that thing that the minister went to? And I said, listen, the Ministry of Works and Transport has a division or directorate in it that is in charge of the Namibia Meteorological Service. The Meteorological Service, if you guys remember, there was a bunch of guys that we used to interview here on Eagle FM from the Met office, from the Meteorological Service, Mr. Gobetsi, Odile Gobetsi, and Mr. Nashikaku. For some reason, they just stopped answering our calls. I don't know what happened. Probably a directive was sent. Don't be interviewed by the media anymore. I don't know. But they are the official weather people of Namibia. They are the official, that office is the official Met office of this country. A key office, an office that has to tell us about the potential for certain particular weather anomalies to be expected. And you know what? That office is silent. Not the two gentlemen, the names that I mentioned, not those two gentlemen. I'm talking about the office itself. You see, for example, like in marketing or in the realm of, let's say, commercial activity, if economic hardships hits your economy as a country, that economic hardship immediately starts cascading downwards into your private sector. And your private sector has to do one of two things. They either shirk, shy away, and die a miserable death in that economy, or they respond and they develop resilient ways to ensure that commercial activity still persists. Because persistent and healthy commercial activity ensures continuous economic activity. So, now we sit here in this broader discussion. And then you're going to ask me, what does that have to do with the weather and the climate, Dwight? It is exactly the same philosophy. You see, you don't know that we sit with a valuable resource, a lovely office known as the Meteorological Service of Namibia or the Namibia Meteorological Service. They sit here behind Windhoek High School. You know that side road that you have to drive up past the hostel facilities of Windhoek High School? They are there, somewhere there behind there. There's a church there somewhere. They sit back there. Strategic office that provides strategic information sets. Or that gathers them. Because I don't know where they shared off to. I have not seen any particular office, whether it be Ministry of Environment, Ministry of Agriculture, or Ministry of Works and Transport, have a public notice board of this information. This office should technically be the most important office behind the office of the president. They should technically be in the office of the prime minister. That's how strategic this division should be. This division is probably the division I would have advocated for to be moved into the office of the president. Not a commissioner of petroleum. No. That office of weather forecasters, of weather magicians and witch doctors, that's all. Die Owens for that's it. Sorry for calling you guys witch doctors on Heroes Day. Like I said, all of us technically have an aspect of heroism in us. But I believe you guys should be the modern day heroes of Namibia because you guys are the guys that we will all be dependent upon for the next 30 years in terms of how we navigate this complex discussion of climate change. This complex discussion of climate change. Now here's a spanner to throw into the works. So currently, or silently should I rather say, Namibia developed Namibia developed through the NSA, the National Spatial Plan, which helps with this desertification discussion. Because We submitted a document in 2023, or in 2022, I see here, because it says 2022, but it was literally labeled as 2023. We submitted a document known as... Okay, let me download it. Known as Namibia's National Report for the Convention on Combating Desertification, the UNCCD. In this document, its cover says 2 March 2023, but it was literally submitted in 2022. So this report was submitted by the government of Namibia to the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification. And this particular dimension, this particular report looks at strategic objectives. And before we get into the conversation of strategic objectives and the other particular contained assets within this report, we quickly take a short ad break and we come back right after this.
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 4 kg Real Good IQF chicken mixed portions, only $194.99. 2 liter Right Brand sunflower seed oil for $69.99. And 3 kg pasta grande, macaroni or elbows pasta, just $69.99 each. Valid until 6 September 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's major league birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any 3 participating products. WhatsApp the code on your till slip and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
You heard it right there, guys, through that ad, you know. You have the opportunity of winning your share of $500,000 of goodies. But nonetheless, obviously getting back from the short ad break, getting back into where we left off just here before the ad break on the home run. Some key indicators that emanate from this report that I referenced a little bit earlier speaks towards, so, you know, like basic geographic details that you've got to list in this report. Now, this report is a good, how many pages is this? 125 pages. Has a whole bunch of graphs specifically about surface areas that we've got, like tree-covered areas in square kilometers, grasslands, croplands, wetlands, artificial surfaces, other kinds of lands, water bodies. And then basically you've got to look at that which has no data. For example, like certain particular kinds of spaces that doesn't have data. But here's the funny thing. All these data sets from 2003 end at 2019. So Namibia has not submitted an updated document or report like this report to the UNCCD. Another thing has also been a specific comment that's on page 7 of this document, of this national report of Namibia. Now, why I reference page 7 specifically is because in this detailed classification of the surface areas of this country, whether it be water-based, aquatic, or whether it be dry land, or whether it be the dry land is covered in forests, or it has got rangelands, is that it helps to guide the country in terms of understanding whether or not we need an extra piece of legislation to help with data collection about this resource. Remember, land is a resource. Land is a resource. It's the particular philosophic position that you ask from. Now, I've been given a lovely particular lecture one day by a fellow sibling regarding philosophy and science. You see, philosophy was the precursor, is the parent of science, because philosophy helped to give rise to scientific interrogation. You see, with philosophy, you can always ask the question of, what is the possibility of this? But in between, when you ask that question of what is the possibility of this event, right? There was someone that went and thought up and developed statistical analysis, specifically with a school of thought within statistical analysis about probabilities. the various kinds of probability theorems that also exist within it, and how do you ask certain questions and answer it with certain particular statistical calculations. Now, if you want a basic summation of a total population of something, you know what to do. If you want to find the average, which is the mean, you want to find the middle spot between a bunch of values, which is, I think, the mode, or is that the median? And then the other one is the other one about, you know, finding sort of like the most occurring value within that collection of values. Not that any of those particular things have, because in many cases people just go for the average classification or the average reoccurring value or the average spread across a specific range of values. But no one goes for the middle position and no one tries to understand or cares about how many values are there within this particular cluster of values. But in statistics and in philosophy, there is a question that pops up, which is a question on both sides. What is the possibility of something? What is the possibility Namibia can become drier than what Namibia currently is? What is the possibility that Namibia can experience further diminished rainfall than what it currently is experiencing? What is the possibility that Namibia can potentially suffer a very bad natural disaster? What is the possibility that Namibia can have rapid rural to urban migration created and forced by natural disasters? These are all active possibilities and scenarios that Namibia has to think about. These are all active scenarios that Namibia has to wait. These are all active scenarios that Namibia has to plan for. But do you know what Namibia is willing to participate in? And this has been the disappointing thing of the latest administration since 2025 into this new year of 2026. We are actively pursuing to increase the heat of this planet with that oil exploration in the south of the country. We are actively seeking to participate in this. So we are actively seeking to become the bad guy in the equation. Yes. Yes, if you're an oil-producing country... Okay, let me first get the first caller's contribution through. Eagle FM... Okay, missed call. You can still call through at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen. That just apologies to that caller who tried to get through. But let me position the hypothesis to you once again. There's a multitude of hypotheses that are popping up in this discussion. Let me position this latest one. So we are willing to commit suicide as a country by becoming a bad guy in the global discussion of resource extraction. You see, pursuing nuclear science for civilian good, for the greater good of Namibia and potentially Southern African humanity, that is something I am putting a rubber stamp on. That is something. Because Namibia clearly knows we don't want to be stepping on no one's toes by trying to develop nuclear bombs. No, 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 no. And after reading a little bit more extensively and understanding what nuclear science actually entails, that is not just about nuclear bomb development, it's technically about, you know, for the greater good. Improving medical facilities in your country, having the ability to do this. Meaning you'll have the ability to get, what's that scan? CT scan? But it's supposed to be known as the nuclear something scan, nuclear CT scan. Is it that scan or is it the other scan? That they dropped the word intentionally, the word nuclear. But your body is, when you stand in front of that scan, your body is blasted with radiation. And it's specifically radiation so that they can see soft tissue, not your bone skeleton. You know, that's a different scanning machine. That's one that looks for, bone fractures and stuff. So, it's for the greater good. It is for the greater good. But believe you me, oil and gas, I've never seen, unless you are living in the UAE or in the GCC countries, the Arabian Gulf countries, I have never seen oil for the greater good. I have not seen it. I have not seen it, guys. Maybe in Alaska, but that's on a limited scale. Not even in Australia. I have not seen oil and gas for the greater good of society. I have not seen it. I have not seen it. Not even in Russia. I have not seen oil and gas for the greater good of society. Do you know why I say this? Because there's evidence that Namibia has not done this before. Because we've not seen diamonds for the greater good of Namibia. We have not seen it. And yet, and this is the sad thing. This is the truly sad part. In year one and a half of the 5 years of President Nandi Ndaitwah's presidency. In year one and a half, you can completely see that the whole country, the whole industries, the administration has completely forgotten about pivoting industries, pivoting the economy away from just serving industries to actually serving us Namibians. It has pivoted away from that. Guys, the evidence is there. The evidence is there. The only sector at literally purposefully working for Namibia is the tourism sector. Is the agricultural sector. The only two sectors working for you. You. Even if you're unemployed. Even if you're underage. Even if you're elderly. Even if you're living on a conditional grant in this country. The only two sectors working for you is agriculture and it's tourism. The only two industries working for you is agriculture and it's tourism. There's no mining company that'll convince me. There is no, there's no banking company that'll convince me. There's no government office that'll convince me. The evidence is there. It's not even about twisting words or framing concepts differently. The evidence is fact. The evidence is there. So, we've got to ask this question. This question has been about, do we actually know where the global climate is going? And what is Namibia's position in that global climate? Do we actually know? Do we have the capabilities of dealing with potential disasters, natural disasters, when the time comes? This Middle Eastern conflict has done the worst to us. It'll still continue doing the worst. But let me get the next caller's contribution coming through. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Yeah, I knew you are alone. If you are not alone, you are not going to pick up this time around. Oh, good afternoon, how are you?
Good and younger Bonner. David is younger Bonner here. That comment.
Is he there?
He's here.
Why is it that you have picked up a telephone early? Because I know whenever you are conducting your lecture.
Yeah.
So usually you don't go 30 minutes, 40 minutes talking without having conversation or interaction with learners.
No, Angabona, you know that I'm liberal, Angabona.
Very much. So, liberal and conservative, which one is the best, actually?
Both.
Which one has the greater goods?
Both.
The society.
Because in communication, you can be liberal, but in your own personal constitution, you can be conservative.
But that conservative, because every time, I never heard about anything good about conservative. Except
Angabona, you are conservative, Angabona. You know that.
Maybe I don't know. You know, sometimes we don't know ourselves very well.
Yeah, that is true. That is
we
true.
We might be acting and doing some things, thinking that we are liberal. Eh? Liberal, like you said. I thought I'm so democratic and, but as far people, even my children, sometimes, hey, daddy, why you always become so dictatorship and what I say?
Angubona.
There are times when you really take decision that is not welcome by many, many other people.
Yeah, yeah.
So, otherwise, how are you?
Okay, on your side, Angubona.
When I was listening to the speech of the president,
yeah,
Excellency President Nandi Ndaitwa, yesterday, he was actually more concerned with the. He was actually saying that the sport is apparently second to agriculture in terms of job creation, in terms of business opportunities, in terms of, all those kind of things, especially the social ill that we want to address. Then we are saying that sport is second to agriculture. And you are saying maybe agriculture there, we can also integrate it, incorporate it with tourism. Maybe tourism, we can incorporate it.
Angubona, tourism is massive, Angubona.
It's massive.
It's mad because tourism incorporates transport. It incorporates it has hospitality basically in it, but then it also has aspects of sport in it. It has aspects of education in it. Tourism is a more dynamic beast than what agriculture is, because we know agriculture is based off a resource, but tourism is based off multiple resources. It can be water, it can be land, it can be air, it can be urban, it can be rural. So it's technically a multidimensional beast or animal, if we can use another term. But when we look at sport, Angubona, I don't see that impact. If the president used those statistics, I'll go and hunt for them today to try and find those statistics of actual employment that has made remarkable changes within the Namibian landscape. But if she made that statement yesterday, I don't know where she got. I don't know where she got that statistics.
Yesterday, and then when she was opening apparently sports complex, I don't know that complex.
The one in the north.
The one in the north, somewhere in Angwena there.
Yeah.
And she was really hammering that yes, sport is equal or equivalent to agriculture. And then and I was now thinking. Because I know tourism, because remember, she's also the one who was, I first heard the issue of village tourism from her.
Yeah.
When she was then a minister of tourism.
Yeah.
And when you look at now this tourism, the benefits are actually massive. But I don't know whether those benefits really trickle down to the rural people, because here there are no establishment, tourism establishment much, except when you go to Ondangwa, perhaps, or Oshakati, I don't know. But in the periphery areas, are they establishment for really tourism, or the tourists are just passing by, or coming from maybe the coast, going this side of Kunene?
Angubona, did you listen to Monday's On the Radar, the one that I presented? Because it seems the whole northern part, the interview that I had with the economist, he described, because his investment firm has access to the Hospitality Association of Namibia's data about beds sold and booked. And if you take that whole northern part of Namibia from Zambezi to northern Kunene, It was the best performing segment of the country, part. So if you're worried about like rural tourism, and cultural tourism, it seems like it is picking up specifically.
Well, it's picking up.
It is picking up, and that was July's statistics. That was data for the July. So the yes is there. That's the reason why I could leverage on data that can basically counter to what the president said, because I don't know where the president is talking about sports impact, because if I'm talking about a sports economy, Angabona, I'm talking about we have paid athletes. I want to see David being the coach of a local football team, and he's being paid $5,000 a week in wages. That's what I want to see. That's the economy. When we speak about sports economy on Eagle FM, that's what we're talking about, Angabona. We're not talking about temporary construction jobs at a facility. And then it looks nice and it's an economic, you know, positive for that short term period. But then that person has to go home and then they have to look for the next gig job again.
Yeah. So I don't know how it can be made sustainable. And if that is the case, I do support and agree.
Angabona, it is there. It is there.
Those data. And if that is the case, why is it that I don't see most of the tourists in our villages there? I don't even see them. I only see them passing through.
So you do see them. Angabona, so you do see. So you do see them.
Not even passing through those campsite establishments.
No, give them a cup of coffee, Angabona. Sell them a cup of coffee. Sell them a cup of coffee and some chocolate chip cookies.
Something like that. That's what I'm asking. Are there some kind of establishment?
Yeah.
In the rural area?
Yeah. I was at one last year. You know it. I was at one last year. They on the other side of Ondangwa.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name? Ongula?
Okay.
Yeah, that's the place's name, Ongula.
Okay, if that is the issue, ne?
Yeah, there's a lodge there.
It means that the sport, tourism, agriculture, all those three sectors can be incorporated, and then we see how we can perhaps promote them.
Yeah.
Because I'm still wondering, even when I visited Ongodiva Trade Fair.
Yeah.
I wanted to eat some of this traditional cooked foods.
Yeah.
I didn't see them. They told me that, no, go and see Omavanda that side. Where, when I went to the other space.
Yeah.
It's only meat. It's only chicken. The usual one that we eat. I couldn't see Omavanda. I couldn't see Omutete. Apart from the Omutete that is transformed into juice, into teeth and many other few things.
Yeah.
But that to eat Evanda and Oshifima and Omtete, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Looking around, until my children just decided, Daddy, can't we just sit here and then eat the meat that we usually eat?
Yeah.
And the chicken that is fried here. So I had to succumb to that.
Yeah.
Because I could not see the traditional food. The ones that are there in the same, they have got their own hall.
Mm.
But you see the ones that are not cooked.
Mm.
I wanted to eat. I wanted my children to eat those ones. The ones that they may not know how to cook, prepare. I wanted, but they are not there.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's promote those three sectors, those economic sectors, if they can really boost our employment, our economy, I think it's good enough.
Yep.
So now, maybe like you mentioned about the restoration that might be needed there.
Mm.
So we were talking about data correction, or what was it?
Yeah, basically data collection, but sort of like just because the thing is, Angabona, as the world is moving ahead with every space, Namibia cannot be behind in having old or delayed information or data sets continuously. Mm. Because that is our biggest curse, our biggest burden. We collect the data too slow. We generate the data too slow. The NSA, I will leave them alone for now because I know they're not as powerful as Statistics South Africa, which is the level of a ministry, meaning their statistician general can literally tell a minister, listen, I want the data from your ministry. We've got to churn out these critical sets of information because the economy has to know. Because Angabona, how will we know? about the various dimensions of our economy. We're supposed to know. We don't know. And if you have the fragmentation that David asked me a little bit about, the meteorological service that sits under Ministry of Works and Transport, but you have environment and agriculture right there, how?
You know, one thing that the how is a very critical question, which is always left unaddressed, so to say. But when you do some kind of situational analysis, to those institutions, and then you discover that yes, there are discrepancies, there are a lot of issues there that need to be addressed. So that situational analysis can also give you a picture as to how we can further, or we can take opportunity into those sectors. I remember when you talk about those, let's say now, environment.
Yeah.
Maybe you are looking at climate change, for example. And you find out that, yes, it's true, but the information that you get, you say, yes, so women are there, men are there, but they will just tell you that, no, we don't discriminate.
Yeah.
So we give this water to each and everybody. This borehole, we are having some, we are working together with maybe environmental investment fund.
Yeah.
And when we want to drill boards in those community.
Yeah.
We don't even look at data disaggregated, perspective.
Yeah.
We just give. We don't discriminate. But you find out that it's men who are mostly owning those boreholes.
Indeed.
There are the men, there is only men who have got livestock. So maybe the women have got more access to chicken at their own level.
Mm.
But when it comes to access to funding, to fund those economic projects, you find out that the women are left behind.
Mm.
Men are the one who own the livestock.
Mm.
Even if they own them. So maybe the woman is the one who is taking care of them, maybe the wife or whoever, taking care of them when the men are at Oshimba, neglected to Windhoek or Kitmans and wherever. But the people who are managing those livestock, and they are not even getting access to access to the benefit that is accrued from those projects.
Yeah.
It's men.
Yes, Angabona.
Women are benefit. So if they don't own any livestock, and therefore they cannot even get a loan, maybe from Development Bank of Namibia, they can't. So I just see that there are still some kind of imbalances in terms of access to agricultural projects or tourist projects or whatever you can call it. So there's still some kind of discrepancies in terms of gender balance. So maybe like you are saying, we need maybe a registration that specifically speak to that area, who are the people who are mostly benefiting.
Yeah.
And the differences that they are, the beneficiaries are getting. I still see that there are a lot of imbalances in terms of gender balance or gender equity.
Mm.
So let me listen. I just wanted to hear whether you are here there alone, or you are the people who are more conservative than us.
Angabona. Okay. See you a little bit later, Angabona. So, David, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's cool.
Are you also now starting with one-liners like Angubona?
Yeah. So, how are things going?
No, it's perplexing. It's not confusing.
Yeah.
It's just perplexing because it creates its own confusion. But yeah. It is confusing, but it is perplexing, which is basically the same word.
Being confused is the best thing that you can be if you want to learn, because you first need to be confused so that you find a way on how to get out there. It's true. Yeah, it's like
I'm only remembering your question before we stepped in here when you asked me, Dwight, what was that thing yesterday where Nikundi was? And I said, it's the climate outlook for SADC.
Yeah, I was also shocked. I was reading it. I think I presented it today. You recommended that to me. Then when I look at it, to say, what is transport doing?
Works in transport.
In the climate-related affairs.
which is a bit funny because...
No, it's unusual.
Yeah, because...
It's unusual because it's not in line. But maybe there is a reason behind that.
Yeah.
It was even a keynote address. Do we have climate infrastructure? Maybe. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But was that the content?
That was the content. But the content is the one after those speeches.
Uh-huh.
That's the actual content I want. But before we continue, we could quickly take a short break.
Mm.
Ya Shoprite ah ori lipondo to I karekewa rina onda do dipedirera mona ekhra mama seregali siwa maseregali no mirongo ndatu tokwatiwa yo chepap scroning freezer dry instant coffee ke dorashike ezreno mirongo amano no ngwei nesenda o mirongo ngwei no ngwei ke shimwe ekro gramadiro mirongo dorushiro crystal gold rice ke dorashike ezreno mirongo ni nahamano nesenda o mirongo ngwei no ngwei endato dika odino kushu siwa masiku ga amano ga september ovura oyo tunjika randa no kukupisa ushinji mondo do pomba daivaro ya Shoprite ishewe otovuro kukorora okapakete ukari unampito yo kusidara Pambu, Shimari Waibuli Sepetata, Yomiriona, Osho, Ukarata Omaganoga Shoprite. Randa Ita tu, Yomirandisamate Kuta Ombinga, Tuma, O WhatsApp Ayonomora, Irko Kambapirakwe, Komarandero, Detohora Okapakete, Utare, Ngerengwe, Ongwe, Omsindani, Omnerago, Oko Shoprite, Akuke.
We come back, guys. David is just being funny off air, but yeah. Yeah, David. So yeah, that where you still left off with your train of thought.
Yeah, no, just which is not necessarily the main conversation, but it was just to me. I wanted to understand what was the reason behind that transportation in climate related affairs, or everything is climate.
Yeah,
and also the fact that it's a keynote speaker.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with the content of the speech that was given. When I look at it, is that from the arrangement of things and the little knowledge I have about protocols, I think something maybe should have been explained better.
Yeah.
And on the intentional, unless there's something that really we do not know. And if it's so, if that is really something that we did not look at,
or the case maybe.
Then it's a problem with institutional coherence. And also a collaboration of institutions, because we must always find each other.
Yeah.
And where we are now, when you have discussion, especially discussion of climate, which cut across ministries, you really start realizing that although experts are in the same field, they are not talking to each other.
Mm.
The Ministry of Agriculture is here doing its own project. Then you also see environment here on its own project. Then you also start to say where do we build that, because those are not even sister, they are identical twins. Yeah. Agriculture and
environment,
they are identical twins, and they must function almost together. Mm. If not at the same time. But
let's put mines in there, industries, mines and energy, because they also depend on the same resource, which is land. So they also have to be there.
Yeah, they have to be there. They have to be there. But it's where we are going. What necessary is where we are going, what is driving us, and what is the outlook looking like, especially what we are getting from those global summits, global, you know, engagements. And also to see, are we just presenting faces there, or we really have what we want to get into? Maybe just to look into that too.
Should I share with you what was summarized from the minister's speech? Because I'm still waiting on the minister's speech from my... I don't want to use the proverbial like Begicele used for the first time that Czech mafia guy was arrested back in the 2000s.
Yeah.
When Peggy Taylor, when he was the chief of police in South Africa, where he said, no, it's my friend.
It's my friend.
No, I don't want to say that phrase.
Yeah.
But the unfortunate thing is I know that the, I've worked with the chief PRO of Ministry of Environment.
Yeah.
So what was said by the minister, by Minister Indeleni Daniel at, in Mongolia at COP17?
Yeah.
The minister said Namibia is strengthening preparedness through early warning systems, contingency planning, sustainable land management, water security measures, and ecosystem restoration. Now, water security measures, remember, was that Kavango Link discussion.
Yeah.
The straw being put in the Kavango River.
Yeah.
Which is going to create problems.
Mm.
Definitely. Ecosystem restoration. We know Namibia is doing this. There's the Nila Leg. There's community-based resource management.
Mm.
And then there's the other sort of like initiatives taking place across the country.
Mm.
And then there's early warning systems, for example, like natural disasters.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, before you walked in, David, I asked the question specifically to the listeners, but it's once again a philosophic position.
Mm.
We are participating in oil discovery and gas discovery, which is blamed for the climate crisis.
Yeah.
Yet, we are willing to lose our good guy status, ne?
Yeah.
For a strategic economic advantage.
Yeah.
It's just, it's to you, the listener. I'm just giving you the evidence. Just measure this up, David. If we know that the activity we're engaging in is the prime reason for where the world is going and its climate being unpredictable. The question that any sane, logical person will ask is, then why are we doing this?
No, it's a good question. And I think I asked that question before.
You asked yesterday, I think also on Monday.
Yeah, but look at the reality on the ground is that most of the global players, they contradict each other.
Yeah.
Especially where their interests are bumping into each other.
Yeah.
You find in one country, even the champions of climate change, when you look at their contribution to greenhouse gases around the globe, they might be in the top 20.
Yeah.
But when you look at what is interesting is that when you look at Africa and its contribution, you realize that no matter how many coals we are burning, you are contributing almost nothing to the global.
I mean, even if you identify Nigeria and South Africa, Nigeria and South Africa would be, if you average it out against the other 50 countries, it'll be small.
No, they are not even contributing 5% to the greenhouse gases. You realize that it's technically not a problem when you are looking at it, and it depends. Somebody, and it's a discussion that is very critical to say, African leaders realize to say, after Europe build, after USA build, some of these things were built at the back of slavery.
Some of resource extraction, colonialism.
Some of these things were built due to, burning coals in mines and until they exploit, until they don't have a blue sky.
Yeah.
Do you know that Africa is the only continent which has
continuous blue sky.
Some people are even shocked when they are seeing a blue sky.
Yep.
Some people are coming here to have a blue sky, and that's a sign of life. The aspect of oil and green sector, it has been debated, and when you listen properly, especially to climate activists in Namibia. Some of them, they try to pull away from the conversation. But the real question is that who do you want to be and who are you praising? And if we have two strategic sectors, we don't need to think who is going to be offended. We can still play with oil and gas. At the same time, we have climate. And that's what I supported very well, because up to now, there is never a city. Maybe they are in the process of proving it.
Yeah.
There is never a city that was built purely by the green sector. I'm not saying the green sector is not contributing.
No, you are right.
Yeah.
No city was born.
There is no
without mining.
Yeah.
And without manufacturing.
Yeah.
Manufacturing using dirty energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is no evidence yet that has to prove to say in the next 30 years, if Africa invest in green sector only,
yeah,
they are going to be at a certain level.
Yeah.
Because these things are always complementary with each other. Maybe if you say those countries that have defied the environment, that have polluted the ocean, that have polluted the air that we don't have control over, maybe they should stop a little bit. But here is the beautiful thing. With green financing, what Africa only have, and we must tell each other the truth, what Africa only have is...
I don't know why you're saying it like that.
No, it's an opportunity to get green finance.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity to get green finance. That is where we are getting into. Yeah. Because other countries have realized that that could be the only way that they will survive. Because, when you look at those countries, they have suffered a lot due to greenhouse, impact into the environment. But now when you are looking at it, you realize to say the only thing that Africa has is access to green finance.
Yeah.
Which is, you see, not only green hydrogen that you see in Namibia, but there are a lot of projects that are looking at access to green finance. If Africa plays its card very well, they'll be able to get it from the world when it comes to green. But you can't go green 100% just like that.
Yeah.
I still believe that if those things can complement each other, then we find a way. Then I'll still believe that what I've been said by the Minister of Minerals, Gwenem Hatashe, is still working.
They've come as a Minister of Mining, a Minister of Energy, and a Minister of Minerals.
No.
Oh, it's Mentashe, Minerals and Mining.
Yeah, Matashe is Petroleum and Mining.
Yeah.
And he says coal is our critical mineral. It's our critical mineral until we come to the point that these two energy, they can complement each other, or we have more of this green sector.
Mm.
But it's undeniable also to say there are good things in the green energy sector or green energy sector that are proven scientifically.
Yeah.
But there is one thing about science. There is one thing about practicality too. To say, if you want to industrialize, you have to use both energy.
Mm.
Then in terms of Namibia, our effort in Namibia as a small country, which is already having two deserts, as you have mentioned before, and problems of water. Our engagement in management of natural resources can impact us only, but not necessarily that our contribution will have a directly negative impact to the whole world in terms of that. But the beautiful thing about Namibia is also that one thing that we have done very well, maybe don't praise ourselves, is keeping a natural environment.
We are good at it.
Yeah, it's keeping a natural environment. We might be poor, but we also keep a natural environment. If you look at other countries, when people are speaking about desertification, we may have gone other way, but when you look at even the construction of houses now, you realize that keeping a natural environment is one thing that we must praise ourselves with. But money is necessary, and it must be very clear when we are into these discussions. Not only to say we want money, but at least we must have bigger projects that we are looking into. But at the same time, oil and gas, you know what is interesting about global players? Is that the same country that is funding green sector, the same country that have much shares in so-called dirty energy.
Yeah.
They are just together.
There's France.
Yeah.
And they've got a whole range of those companies.
Yeah.
There's Germany with its coal-powered stations.
Yeah.
There's the UK with its oil and gas.
Yeah.
There's definitely the US. There's definitely Russia.
Yeah.
But you know what's the funny thing which you pointed out?
Yeah.
They haven't switched off. They haven't told those industries, go and close your shops. Go and switch off your mines. Go and stop the tap.
No, you can't do that because the reality will always hit you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are things that you want to do. There are things that you have to do for you to survive. That's why I think Namibian, especially the scholars of science and the researcher within environmental science, they should not beat themselves up. they should not be stressed. No, it's true. No.
Because I'm trying to understand why did you beat yourself up?
No, they should not be stressed.
Yeah.
When, there's much investment going to oil industry.
Yeah.
Because that is, you have to be real.
It's a strategic resource.
Yeah, a strategic resource. Yeah.
Because remember yesterday was it international relations dimension?
Mm.
But if we look at this from an international relations dimension,
yeah.
This whole agenda of let me stay on the agenda that I mentioned a little bit earlier in today's show. There are 54 African countries and 54 of them have national development plans.
Mm.
Do you know what each of those documents basically say?
Mm.
We have to compete with our closest neighbors.
Mm.
It doesn't say it precisely and expressly like that,
yeah.
But it does say improve Namibia so that Namibia looks good.
Mm.
Now, if you have 54 people saying the same thing, improve my country so that my country looks good, we are technically competing with each other.
No. You know, by nature, we are competitive. Yeah. Competition will not die.
Yeah.
But collaboration also must be emphasized. Do you know that you can compete and collaborate at the same time?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's us in South Africa. But yeah, before we continue, just keep the competition train of thought. We'll be back after the ad break.
Yeah.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts, working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
So we come back from the quick break right there. We've got 30 minutes left. Remember, today is a shortened version of the home run. We're only here up and until 6. David, you were still on a train of thought before the outbreak?
Yeah, we were still on the discussion of
competition.
Competition.
Yeah.
And also where we have to get into.
Yeah.
But in terms of aspect of climate, one thing I have to also to indicate very clearly is that It's not our business as the first place, but it's also our job. We are part of the world. The world is going green. We must respect that.
Mm.
But before the world went green, and everybody must be very clear, we should always be able to bring all these things closer to each other so that we can get what we want to get into. And the hard reality is that you can have a climate-related conference in Namibia, just for example. Then everybody who went to that climate is wearing a suit that was made from a certain factory that was transported using diesel or maybe it was flied using oil, gas and all these things.
Yeah.
The same person is also using a car that is using petrol and many other things. The only thing which is green maybe is the tire that is wearing there. Or maybe
it's made from petroleum tires, and not from petroleum.
Yeah, the only thing that is green, maybe it's just the color of it.
Yeah.
But just to indicate that, not to say it's not a good thing to go green, but it's to say we need to move strategically. Otherwise, the world will confuse us more if they are already also not doing what they want Africa to do.
Mm.
If you look at 2024, what was it? COP29 or what was it? 2024.
Yeah.
But I know it was a conference of party on climate change where...
The one in Azerbaijan?
Yes.
Yeah. Because last year was Brazil, 30.
Yeah. Azerbaijan, where that time Pamba Shifeta was still a minister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apart from looking at the aspect of Namibia being faced with the worst drought that ever happened in the past 60 years, that was 2024 now.
Mm.
One of the things that he indicated is that African countries must be given their money that they were promised.
No, it's the loss and damage fund.
Yeah.
It's the loss and damage fund.
They must be given their money. One thing I have to indicate is that the finance part.
David, you actually stepped into a lovely part of our discussion.
The finance part, as I indicated, is the only thing that that Africa has so much, because most of the impact that we have is because of science. Prove that is because of what is being done.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in our continent,
but
by other people who contributed much
to
that destruction of the world.
I mean, if you, for example, look at India and China together.
Yeah.
Right next to each other, they are neighbors.
Yeah.
David, it's two countries. One has 1.4 billion people and 1.7 billion people respectively. No, 1.3 billion people respectively.
Mm.
In both scenarios, these are two massive concentrations of densely populated countries.
Yeah.
And they are energy hungry, David. They are energy hungry.
Mm.
Then you've got Indonesia, yeah. 260 million.
Yeah.
The United States, 300 million.
Mm.
Russia is 180 million. Mm. Who else is densely populated some part of the world? There's someone else also that at least has 500 million.
Mm.
But these densely, and most of them are in the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen a map and you pull that map, you pull a line where the equator is,
yeah.
you will see that Southern Africa, South America, Oceania and parts of Southeast Asia. It's there is less land, less people, and there are less countries. So we firstly sit with a problem being that the top half of the world, the northern hemisphere, is densely populated.
Yeah.
It's almost 80% of the world population is in the is in the northern part of the world.
Yeah.
That's the northern part that is the most hungry, it consumes the most resources, it has all the industries. David, you know what's the saddest thing when you look at that specific geographic fact? You realize how Africa will, it'll be difficult for Africa, especially Southern Africa, to convince the Northern Hemisphere. Please bring, you know that example of Zimbabwe you love using, the lithium example?
Yeah.
Please bring all your factories here. Do you know how difficult it is to convince where 5 billion people on that side of the world.
I know.
And you want to take the factory jobs away from them.
No, it's almost impossible. And the numbers that you've mentioned, they are proof of that. And the other thing also that maybe you should think about is when we get instructions instead of advice.
True.
No, that is becoming very problematic.
Yeah, it is.
Do you know that it's quite very, very difficult? There's a question I asked at GIC, Government
Information Center.
When there was a discussion about Namibia, EU Business Forum.
Oh, yes, back in June.
Yeah.
Or is it
then there's a question which I asked about the capacity of Namibian private sector to compete internationally. And the reason I ask that question is the rule of engagement in terms of trade. When you are trading with EU, you have a certain way. There are strict requirements, especially looking at the products.
Yeah.
And one of the things is traceability of your product.
Yeah.
If you are selling mahangu, or if you are selling a bread, just for example, to the UK, they must be able to know where are these products coming from.
Yeah, the track and tracing.
Track and tracing. Where are they coming from? How were they produced? Were the people exploited? And if they were not exploited, were they produced in a situation where the environment was destroyed? And in the aspect that environment was destroyed, then you are not business partners anymore.
Yeah.
Then you'll be able to understand that we are still very far, especially to meet that standard. What does that mean now? That means that for you to be successful at home, so that you can compete globally, you need somebody to come from there to assist you, not for free, but to train you, and also to make sure that giving you machines so that you can be able to trade on the other level. But the other thing that you also need to look at is the aspect of reciprocity in terms of trade. Africa is not doing that.
No, we're not.
No, you don't do that. You don't even want to know which factory these things come from.
Yeah.
You just buy, maybe do quality assurance, or chemical checking, quality assurance to look at the standard.
Yeah.
But you don't really have aspect of traceability.
Mm.
That's why in that aspect of not having much power in issues of green sector, finance will continue to be our only thing that mainly connect us today. But what is interesting is also the aspect of looking at it in terms of long term. If you look at that green sector agenda in terms of long term, who is going to benefit really in that sector? Because you just let me say we want the better of value addition in the mining sector, stopping extraction.
Mm.
Then you come to the aspect of green sector. Now you have EVs, electrical vehicles. That is it's a new market again that is created.
It's a completely new product.
Yeah.
New infrastructure.
New kind of technology.
Yeah.
New engineering system, and you still have to catch up.
Yeah.
Because an EV is already manufactured. It's already built somewhere.
Mm.
Now you still have to catch up. By the time you catch up to say, no, we want to import parts for EV so we can put them together, then you realize that you are very far. That is why the green agenda is a very good agenda, but should not destroy what we have been building when we are not green. Because the reasoning is that those who contributed much to the destruction of this are not Africans.
Yeah.
And we are the victim. I don't want to say the victim of colonialism, but we are the victim of fast changing.
You do know that it's an automatic default setting to start from.
The global perspective. Let's look at it this way. We may travel to Azerbaijan, we may travel to Brazil, we may travel to Paris and do this engagement.
Mm.
But you can't move anywhere without the proper reasoning of African intellectual. I have to trust and believe what you are saying, what you are researching, you are analyzing.
Yeah.
I don't want you to come from somewhere. Just because Dwight is a Namibian, I have to get a second opinion.
Yeah.
Even if you have been around for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And that is where the problem is. The discussion of green sector is good, but what are the African intellectuals saying?
Yeah.
What are the African intellectuals saying? Because if we don't listen from people that do not have money, it's becoming problematic.
No, it's a major thing, Dave, and it's a good point you're highlighting the money dimension.
Yeah.
The biggest concern that has always been, for example, for since I started now paying more attention and more attention and more attention to this climate discussion since 2019,
yeah,
I realized one basic aspect.
Mm.
The knowledge is working against us.
Yeah.
You see, David, we are sitting in Namibia, and we have so many traditional and rural communities with traditional knowledge and rural knowledge that we can actually learn. We can develop a whole library and a knowledge hub about how to deal with, for example, in the event of natural disasters, in the event of how to produce housing that doesn't cost 1 million Namibian dollars, that also doesn't wash away, but technically allows for some sort of a green, a green kind of a housing solution.
Mm.
But if you go into every urban setting, for example, here in Windhoek, the first burden put on you is you must build a property to the value of the soil, which City of Windhoek does not manufacture any soil. I have not seen a land manufacturing plant or factory ever in my life. I don't know who manufactures soil, but there's apparently a price tag on land.
Yeah.
They give you that there's a value for the land.
Yeah.
Then they connect the services. That's added value.
Yeah.
And then you have to build to the value of your neighbors. So if your neighbor paid 500,000 for his or her land.
Yeah.
And they built for 1 million on the land.
Yeah.
You've got to build for 1.5 million as well.
Standard. Yeah.
Now, David, I'm going to ask you, the inputs into that discussion is counter the green agenda.
Mm.
Cement has been identified as a climate change pollutant.
Yeah.
So cement is an issue. We've got a cement mine.
Yeah.
And a cement factory.
Yeah.
I think one or two. So the whole industry itself is problematic.
Mm.
Yet, our local authorities have not moved away from that discussion in terms of production.
Mm.
But if you go use mud and you build a mud house, I'm not saying a mud hut, I'm saying a mud house, David.
Yeah.
A nice mud house.
Yeah.
A mud house is a natural product. A mud house is weather resilient.
Mm.
It's all about the new design and architectural methods that you apply.
Yeah.
Why is that not being promoted? Do you know why?
Mm-hmm.
It'll completely crash the property market in this country.
No, the whole thing is, there's legs and arms in business.
Yeah, and tentacles.
Yeah.
And whiskers.
Yeah, in business. The whole thing, there is always money in it. You know, you cannot understand it without understanding the full picture of how global economic system is working.
Mm.
You realize to say green banks, green funds, green institutions, and also integration of these policies too at the international affairs, and also looking at countries. And my only strong concern, especially what you have said about the knowledge at home,
yeah,
maybe to say indigenous knowledge, there has always been natural ways on surviving. There's always been natural ways of surviving. There is nobody who can teach Africans on natural resource, I mean organic products, for example, or using nature to almost to do anything.
Mm.
That is African. And looking at the history of industrialization and when how things have come about, you realize to say most of these things were introduced to us.
Mm.
But the only thing that I can say is the aspect of knowledge and also understanding that you can also define where you want to get into. Because most of the things that we are following, if we look at them, are these really things that we wanted? If you just look at most of the things that we are doing,
yeah,
we did not look at ourselves and say, what can we say about this?
Yeah.
And there was one question I've asked to say, just to give an example of international laws, to say if we take all these international laws, conventions, and treaties, then you ask yourself one question to say, what is the contribution of Africa? What is the contribution of Namibia to this?
Mm.
Then you realize that you contribute 1% or 2%.
No, we're not even 1%.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean in terms of the mental power? Or are you talking about the production?
No, it's the mental power.
Yeah. No, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's a compliance measure. Do you know why?
Yeah.
I looked at the UNCCD discussions.
Yeah.
We are supposed to have a, what is this thing that, that this report cites here? Here's the funny thing, David. So this was our national report in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So it says here, and it's this national report on desertification is like a whole bunch of geographic data and information Namibia had to submit.
Mm-hmm.
It says here, Namibia currently does not have a legislated uniform land cover / use management system, and those that exist at regional and municipal levels are often incompatible and inconsistent. So basically this is about tracking and tracing the land and water resources on the land. It is against this backdrop that the National Statistics Agency is coordinating the formulation of a harmonized land cover classification standard for the country through the National Spatial Data Infrastructure as per the Statistics Act number 9 of 2011. So then, just quickly fast-forwarding, they went and developed this This framework, the NSA, and it was literally gazetted in 2023, later that year.
Mm.
This particular resource, because this resource, David, land, is the whole reason why this Namibia exists.
I hear you.
I'll say it again, dear listeners. It's the whole reason we exist. This land, doesn't matter if the people in Zambezi sometimes bring up their dodginess about being somewhere else. You are part of us. Just accept it.
Yeah.
So this land, and it's primarily known as the Namibia Land Classification Standard. It was gazetted. What's this? Gazette number 8087. And it basically helps us to take stock of this resource. But here's the thing, David. You asked a very good question. What is our level of contribution?
Mm.
Well, here's the funny thing.
Mm.
Since we signed that agreement in 2023, the Samoa Agreement.
Mm.
Do you know the Samoa Agreement?
I think I'm familiar.
So the Samoa Agreement is the agreement that the EU has with Africa, the Caribbean, and Oceania, or Pacific Island Nations. And it's a development agreement.
Yeah.
It's the most comprehensive development agreement.
Yeah.
It's probably the longest one Africa has been part of. The funny thing is, when we show up at every COP, for the next three COPs, from today in Mongolia, up to end of the year, when we go to Turkey, in Ankara in Turkey, Africa, the Caribbean, and Oceania will technically have, they will be a lead goat. That goat will talk on behalf of us.
Okay, okay.
You know the goat.
I know, I know.
You asked the question to that goat about Namibian businesses' ability to participate, ne?
Yeah, yeah.
That goat will represent three continents in a discussion. Three geographic locations, because we're technically the only continent. So there's your first particular problem already, because when you ask what is Namibia's contribution, it's by proxy. And it's 54 nations being represented by a 27 nation club.
And also common agreement at home, because the driver of a green economy, the driver of the green sector is might have advantage for Africans, or they are advantage for Africans, but it's not us who are driving that project. But one thing that we need to know is that let us not accept everything, but let us contribute too. Let us not only say we want Africans to be given money, because Africa, we are good at getting that money. We have to pressure everybody so somebody has money.
And there's a new partner. Yeah. That thing that I went to from the Green Hydrogen Program.
Yeah.
What's that thing's name? The Climate Fund Initiative.
Mm.
David, when I went and looked up at the CFI, it's a massive organization. It's probably bigger than the World Bank.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money into it. You know, my concern is always here to say, what do we want? Africa, we want development. We just want people to eat. And we don't know this thing. in most cases, when you go to, we don't know these things. Look, ne?
Maslow's hierarchy still applies to us, Africans.
Look, ne?
Yeah.
You come from here, you go to Azerbaijan, you go to Brazil, you go to Mongolia, wherever you go.
Yeah.
Then you discuss critical matters of importance. You speak about the green energy, you speak about the sector. But you ask yourself a question to say, what is the problem at home? The problem at home is food.
Yeah.
First. The problem at home is
housing.
Is housing. The problem at home
is transport.
Is born free to be happy about the future.
Huh?
Not people who are born after independence.
No.
No, I'm just giving you an example because it's young people.
Why are you talking about you?
No, guys, I even
look at David. David, you're throwing in here the Gen Z.
Okay. Yeah. That can be debated, but just to say youth opportunities.
Okay, yes.
Then you ask yourself a question to say, when I enter into this discussion, is it speaking really to me?
Yeah.
Because if you enter in any discussion, in any agreement that you get into, then you look at your needs. When you look at your five needs,
yeah,
am I able to achieve my needs through this agreement? Then that if you are not able to do that, then you're already having a problem.
Yeah.
Because you lose out, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's explained to say when you are out. If you're out of Namibia, whether you went with sport, you are Namibian ambassador.
Yep.
Do you understand? And your job is to do what? Your job is to
represent us.
To represent us and expand our foreign policy.
Yeah.
And people look at foreign policy as this thing which is so big and deep. Foreign policy is just extension of your domestic policies.
Yeah, your number plate on your car is also foreign policy.
Yeah. The problem at home extended to international level.
Yeah.
To say, what are you bringing at home?
Yeah. What are you bringing back from that place?
But if you just there and you see some people say, no, the world is doing this green what, which is good. But what is Namibia? What is in for Namibia?
Mm.
Then if you forget this, then we'll be packing our bags and wearing our suits.
And getting our passports.
Then we get to COP 48.
Where is Namibia? Yeah, we still have two deserts.
Yeah.
Did you apply desertification anti-desertification strategies? Mm. No, we did not.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, before we continue, David, let's quickly take a live read.
Mm.
This Vyavicha University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vyavicha University, where everyone is an achiever. Okay, just let me quickly get the caller's contribution coming through. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Dwight.
Angabwana.
Why did you change the style of management?
Which style of management, Angabona?
Is it because King David came there?
Yeah, he came here, Angabona. Yes, he came here. He was contributing.
Yeah, he has contributed for more than 1 hour.
Yes, Angabona is part of the discussion.
Yeah, I understand. I'm not disputing that.
Angabona has an issue with you, David, just so you know.
No. I am just having an issue of people who are trying to monopolize the system.
What is the story?
No, the story you know it already, Mos. The people who are trying to monopolize, I hope you know from the concept, the way, the terms of monopoly.
Yeah. But Angabwana, we only have 5 minutes and then we have to end.
Because of David, King David.
He's part of the show, Angabwana.
Just look at the Bible. The King David.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Angabwana. Angabwana, share your
shit. This is a serious disappointment.
Angabwana, just share.
Oh, my God. I was listening from the time when you were talking about, yes, the environment, agriculture, what they are twin.
Yeah.
How are they twin? Why are they not working together? Why are they failing us?
Yeah, they maybe are basically David together, yeah.
Maybe King David must answer. Let me tell you, my
David,
friend.
answer your part.
Well, what is the question again?
Why did you say that agriculture and environment are twins, not together?
They are twins. We are talking about they are twins, we don't know, they are not working together, what is the problem, they are twins,
they have complementary roles, and it's not me who is saying they are not working together, those are the statistics and the data which are given to say,
and it's the evidence on the ground,
we still have fragmentation in terms of our institutions.
Who is going to interpret the statistics to us to make it meaningful to us? Their statistics, their information, they are there. Dwight has given us already about the statistics, about tourism, about agriculture. We even incorporated the element of climate change.
Yeah.
Yes. Now they are complementary. That one we know.
Yeah.
Even the law says you can work together. Take all those engagements there. Nobody doesn't know that. But the concern is that since you came in, you know, we are already in a conversation with Dwight. And that's the education that we want. I don't know if you stand in the court of law, the competent court of law, we just speak, and Judge Waitele will just be listening to you.
Why did you mention Judge Waitele? Angabwana, why did you pick him?
It's so frustrating, man. Like, I cannot be wasting my time here. Dwight is helping us to come in to discourage that kind of banning and deposing kind of education system. Now it's the young ones who are coming, who are still trying to, how do you say, invent the wheel, or what? King David, good afternoon, how are you? Or evening, I don't know.
I'm well.
So, where do you think the people are not complimenting or supplementing or complimenting? You say complimenting.
It's not what I'm saying. It's what it is.
It's the evidence.
Yeah.
Where do you think that
we must work toward that? It's not that I'm happy when they are not working together. They may want to work together, but the establishment and the structure is not allowing them to work together as they were supposed to work together.
I understand. They don't want, maybe the structure is not conducive for them to work together. Is it because of the lack of law? Is it because of lack of understanding? Of lack of self-team coordination? What is the issue? Tell us.
Angobona?
Yes.
We... okay.
Let David tell us.
Study has been done, and it's not me who is telling you. Maybe I can give you a report which stated that. Maybe we can be on the same page.
Tell us the story, the report, what he's saying, and allow us to come in so that we know where are we failing. Where are we? Whatever the case might be.
We must also work together like what you want. Let us not also go on this side and the other side. Because if you want things to work together, we must also work together, especially in what you want to get into. Maybe the good question that you should ask is that, how should we reduce institutional fragmentation?
When are you going to get to those questions? Because it's only about 2 minutes left now before the program ends.
The whole year ahead of us, we can still extend the discussion, say.
No, you are not going to extend the discussion unless you stick to Tatewalenga's management team.
We are going to extend the discussion. We are still here tomorrow. We are not going anywhere.
Tomorrow, we wanted to know today. What we wanted to learn today is today, not tomorrow.
Unfortunately, the time is not our friend now, but next time.
The time is not your friend because you wasted time for Dwight to engage with his client.
Angobona, we have to go.
Thanks,
Angobona. Thanks for coming through. David, just one last message your side, if you still something you want
to
add.
Yeah, just to say the conversation should not die. Climate change is real. However, we must not be led, we must lead in this conversation. Let's go beyond the finance, and also let us look at other complementary sources of energy and also of industries too.
And on my side, guys, obviously it's still a work in progress. We are doing a lot of things as Namibia. My worry is we are not multiplying the activities as extensively as I would like, but that's me liking and my preferences. Obviously, it's dependent upon budgets, but nonetheless, stay tuned for the next program after the break, which will be the China Corner, brought to you by the Embassy of China to Namibia. And after this break, we'll see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.